What the second one really did for me, as far as like confidence goes, it just skyrocketed. Once I realized that I did this now once partially, but then the second one fully, I was like, man, I could go do this again and again and again as long as I have the right people in my corner.
Welcome to the Rich Drummers Report, where we talk real estate, business, and wealth building, all while keeping it real. No fluff, no BS. I hope that you enjoy the show. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of The Report. Today, we are in the middle of a closing week, so it's been a little hectic here in the office, but I'm excited because I got someone who is doing some big things in the multifamily space. He just flew out here to San Diego for an event on the multifamily side. I just connected with him out in Orlando, and I got my man, Eric Chatterton. Eric, welcome to the show, brother.
Super excited to be here. Let's rip it.
Yeah, dude, appreciate you coming down, man. We first connected out in Orlando. I think it was just a week and a half ago.
Yep.
And dude, I had a great time out there at Tyler's events. Met so many great people in that network. And it was a fun time. I was only out there for about 24 hours.
Yeah, it was quick.
But dude, I had like the best 24 hours of my life in terms of like real estate investing. It was so much fun. The contacts, the connections, the vibe, the energy was massive. And you were a big part of it. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the kids, poor kids, we broke their record, man.
Oh my gosh, dude, that was so funny, bro. So there was a basketball arcade at the hotel. By the way, the Gaylord Palms in Orlando. Dude, I've heard about this property like on social media. I see there's a lot of events and conferences that are thrown there. And yeah, I never thought it was what it was, but I showed up and I literally remember like I took the red eye out to Orlando that night and I get in. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning, check in. It's still dark outside, but literally right when you walk on the property, it was like, I was not expecting that. It's like a rainforest in there, Hawaii vibes. They had alligators like on the property, just like swimming around. It was sick, dude.
It's sweet. Yeah, cool place for sure. You get lost easy.
Yeah, I got lost like five times.
Yeah, me too.
But anyhow, they had an arcade. And so Eric, myself, I believe James was with
us. Yep, okay.
And a couple other folks, and we're hanging out. And we're in the arcade. They had a basketball arcade. And we're like, do we think we could break that record up there? It was like the score was like 460 all-time record. We're like, I think if we all team up, we probably could.
Yeah, no question.
And sure enough, we did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good times,
I don't think anyone's going to break that one.
I don't know. It's probably still existing for sure.
Yeah, I know. True, true. So anyways, dude, I know you're working with Tyler Devereaux. Tyler's a good friend of mine. Have nothing but the utmost respect for Tyler. He was on the pod a little while back. But dude, I first met Tyler on my old podcast, The Real Estate Takeoff. He came on as a guest. And ever since that, this is in 2020, by the way, like spring of 2020, first time I met Tyler and I was like, dude, his energy was just like contagious. And I was like, this is a good dude. I got to be around this dude more. And ever since we've been friends and he's an investor in our fund now. And, you know, he's doing some big things on the multifamily side, of course. But how'd you get involved with Tyler, man?
Yeah, I actually was just a student through his program. Yeah, I came through as a student started back in 2020. And just wanted to jump into real estate, learn more about multifamily, skipped some of the smaller stuff. I kind of grew up around multifamily in my family as well. Grew up in Oregon. My parents had some single family, multifamily as well. And I just knew I wanted to go bigger. I always knew I wanted to do that. So Tyler's face popped up on my social media, decided to check it out, came through as a student, started doing some deals. And then now I have the opportunity to go back and bless new people that come through and new students, help them with their journey. And now I actually get to teach for Tyler and the multifamily mindset as well. So,
dude, I love that, man. I always tell people, like, if you're going to get started in real estate investing, there's two ways to go about it. You can pay for mentorship and get around the right groups. That's going to shortcut your path from point A to point B. Or you can go out and make the mistakes and pay with your time and your money. Either way, you're going to pay with a little bit of money.
100%.
But if you want the shortest path and you want the best path and the least resistant path to get in and make the least amount of mistakes, that's probably going to be some sort of mastermind, some sort of mentorship group. You know, I remember my first two deals, I didn't have mentorship and used all of our own money. It was myself, 11 unit building. That was all my own 401k money. And I did another deal with a couple partners and dude made all the mistakes, man. And had I had like the proper mentorship, probably would have cleaned up and avoided a lot of those mistakes. And then it was after that, that's when I was like, okay, you know what? It's time to start going bigger. It's time to start raising money. And that's when I went out and received proper mentorship. But without it, man, I don't think I'd be where I'm at today.
For sure. I'm a big believer of it. I mean, the way I look at it, just like you said, I think you're going to spend the money either way. You're going to spend it on mistakes that cost you a whole heck of a lot more, or you spend it to learn how to do it the right way the first time, but also surround yourself with people that can help you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
what year was that when you started in multifamily, and kind of walk us through what that journey was like for you? Like, how did the multifamily thing even come into fruition for you?
Yeah, you know, I was running a solar company before, and it was good. Business was good, but being in that industry, I was in the direct sales space, business development for 12 years. 12 years of anything, sometimes you're looking for that new spark, and that's what I was doing. I wanted something new to really get me out of bed, you know? So I jumped into real estate, yeah. And I started November 2020. And, you know, it wasn't easy, man. It wasn't. Like, it was a foreign language to me. My exposure to real estate before that from my family was just like doing chores, fixing sinks, mowing lawns, shoveling snow. So I didn't ever learn the business side of it, but I knew there was potential. And so when I saw Tyler's group, I just had this like feeling, you know, I knew, I was like, man, this is where I want to be. And this is who I want to do it with. So I went all in. I was willing to bet on me. And at the time, you know, I was getting out of some big debt, made some bad investments in my 20s. I lost back-to-back investments, pretty hefty. But, you know, you learn from those, right?
What were those investments in?
Yeah, so one was in an e-commerce store, and then another was in a hemp farm in Colorado. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think the biggest thing that I took away from it was just vetting the opportunities and also vetting the partners, right? And so that's why when I went to that first multifamily event with Tyler, I was like, man, I can just tell these guys know what they're doing. They're all successful. And there was a path laid out for me. All I had to do was be willing to bet on me, and then also just walk down the path, just go take action.
That's powerful, dude. So hemp farms and the other one was what again?
Like e-commerce.
E-commerce. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And that was like investing into like someone else's like opportunity?
Yeah. So I came in as like a funding partner in them. But then I jumped in. What I liked about the multifamily side was like, I didn't have to rely on anybody else for success. It was just me. But when I jumped in, it was tough. Like, there was a lot of rejection, a lot of failure. And I mean, we submitted 27 LOIs before I got one accepted. And so, you know, around 21, 22, you start like questioning, can I ever get a deal, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm just glad I kept pushing, because now, I mean, it took me 7 months to get my very first deal. That was a 224 unit building in Dallas, Texas. And then literally after we closed on that, 10 days later, got an LOI accepted on another 144 units in Houston. And that was my first year. And the rest is history.
Dude, so a lot of people say like start small, you know, fourplex, something that's easy to wrap your mind around. I started with 11 unit and then quickly went to a 32 unit. And people thought, oh, that's a little bit bigger. Now you went all the way to a 220 unit deal. What do you think that you say to those folks that say, hey, you need to start small before you get into the bigger stuff?
Yeah, I think it's all perspective. Like, there's nothing wrong with starting small at all, especially it's like from a mindset standpoint, it's a little bit more realistic. But like, I was trained to think bigger. And it's not like to say like I own all of those 224 units. Like, I'm just a portion of that, right? And so, but I take pride in that. I take pride in that ownership, but also what I learned from those opportunities, I learned from people that had done it and walked the walk way before me. And so, you know, I was willing to take a haircut on percentages and ownership to go learn from people that are doing these deals, these large deals. And eventually, you know, I could become the sponsor. Now I can sign on the loans. Now I can help other people get into the business. But I think it was just perspective change and just being willing to try something new. But also too, it's all about people. It's all about your team. Like, there's no way in heck that I could have gone and done a 224 unit completely by myself for my first deal. Just no way, right? But when you have a good network, when you have people around you that you can partner with, tag team these deals with, then the potential goes up.
I agree, man. Because it's, you know, you get in the commercial real estate game, it's like just getting a commercial real estate loan. It's like, well, one, you need net worth equal to or greater than loan amount. Mm-hmm. If you don't have it personally, well, then partner with other folks that do, bring on a loan guarantor. And then, you know, obviously to go raise all the capital, right? That's a whole nother task to get these deals debted up. And then manage the contractors, a renovation, all the asset management that goes into it. There's a lot of moving parts.
A lot.
And so the one thing I do love about the larger commercial real estate is it's more of a team sport. The bigger the deal, the bigger the team you need, right? And so multifamily, I think, is a perfect example of that. So tell us with this deal, 220-something units, and you said Dallas, Texas, C-class, are we talking workforce housing?
Yep, Yep. C-class, value add, workforce housing for sure.
What was the story of the deal? Why was the seller selling?
Yeah. So the that deal in itself, that I don't even really like to claim that one as my true first deal. Like I came in, I raised funds for the deal, helped out a little bit with asset management, but I got to partner with Tyler on that deal. So they kind of ran the ship and kind of guided that boat. But like that second deal.
Was this an MF Partners deal?
MF Capital Partners. Yep, MF Capital. So I came in as a partner on that one.
Okay.
But the second one was like the one I consider my true baby. Mm. Like that one, it's crazy how that one came. Like I told you, we just submitted 27 LOIs before we got one accepted. Literally that deal only was brought to us because the 26th LOI, we actually were told that we got that deal. The LOI got accepted verbally. Turns out there was another operator team that went and toured that property the same day, met the owners on site in person, face to face, and they hit it off. And so he awarded the deal to them.
Mm.
So the broker didn't want to mess up the relationship with us. So he was like, hey, like you have to imagine how he felt. Like he had to come deliver that news to us.
Because the LOA was verbally agreed
verbally to? Accepted. Okay, they said that it was going to be executed, signed, get brought back to us the next day.
And even if it was signed, the sellers still could go accept another offer.
They could.
It's not legally binding.
For sure.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, and they wanted to maintain the relationship with us. And so it was cool. The broker ended up bringing us. He's like, hey, I got this really good deal. Before I send it out to my list, you know, you guys can take a peek at it. If you like it, let's move pretty quick. And we did. And that was my second deal. That was the true baby. And like we did the acquisitions, the underwriting process, the acquisitions process, raised the capital, asset managed that deal. We had a really good sponsor on it as well. Tyler's partners on that one as well. But that was a fun one. And then that just like what the second one really did for me, as far as like confidence goes, it just skyrocketed. Once I realized that I did this now once partially, but then the second one fully, I was like, man, I could go do this again and again and again as long as I have the right people in my corner.
Yeah. Like Michael Blanc says, he calls it the law of the first deal. You know, it's like the first deal is the hardest. It's the most challenging. It's going to take the most amount of time, energy, effort. You're going to have struggles and it's not going to be easy to get it to the finish line. But once you do, it's like that second deal, it almost like even if you don't even try to do a second deal, it's almost harder to not do a second deal than it is to do a deal, because all of a sudden now the brokers, the communities, investors see you as a closer. They see you as an apartment operator. And now you have more opportunities coming your way. Brokers are sending you more off-market deals. Lenders respect you more. You have more clout. And also, I think like to your point, you mentioned confidence. Now you have the confidence and you wake up every morning thinking, hey, I'm a bad motherfucker. I can go buy another apartment building,
for
right?
Sure.
Yeah. Watch me go do this. And so your whole mentality kind of shifts as a real estate investor once you get that first deal done. And it's a powerful thing.
Yeah. The identity, I think, is what it was for me. You start like identifying as an actual real estate investor once, like the first one is great, but once you actually do that second one, you're like, wait, I think I'm onto something. I might actually be a true real estate investor at this point. And then you start embodying all of it and then just sky's the limit.
Yeah, yeah. Sky is the limit. Okay, so the next one, not the first one in Dallas. You said it's 100 something units in Houston. And that was like the first, you were like a main GP in that one?
Yep.
Okay, so tell me how that one played out, story of the deal and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, so story of that deal is just like textbook. The owners were just wanting to get out. They like, the kids didn't want the property. And so they were moving all of their properties out of they were selling all their Texas assets. They have assets here in California. And so they just wanted to exit the Texas market completely. And fortunate for them, we live there. Like my roots are in Houston. And so most of my properties, I've got 10 in Texas, 5 in Houston, 3 in Dallas-Fort Worth, 1 in San Antonio, 1 in Victoria, and then 1 in Scottsdale, 1 in Michigan. But so we're trying to have that avatar be, we're helping Texans invest in Texas, right? So we're kind of planting the roots in Texas.
Yeah. Yep. So you're spread out a little bit around the country. You mentioned Scottsdale and some of these other areas. Is it all multifamily deals around
all
the same
multifamily.
Size?
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We like the value add. Most of them, we've got one A-class asset in San Antonio, but majority are all the C-class value add. But, you know, it's a little tough right now too, especially with like my home market being Texas. It's not all sunshine and rainbows like it used to be. You know, insurance has gone through the roof. Taxes has gone through the roof. And, you know, I believe that a lot of people made a ton of money from 2015 to 2021. And just because the way the market was going, you know, some natural appreciation. But like these days, like the way the market is, I feel like you got to be on point, especially when it comes to your asset management. You can't just be a hands-off asset manager. You need to be like really dialed in on it.
I agree. Especially at this part of the cycle, you know, the rent growth has plateaued in a lot of markets. You know, we own a couple larger multifamily deals out in Greensboro, North Carolina. And one of them is a townhome community. And there's no townhomes in that area. And so the rents just keep going up with that asset, C-class asset, but the rents just keep going up. Now, we have another one that's garden style, like 3 miles away. And that one, the rents are kind of plateaued, especially since the interest rate environment went up. And we're kind of like maxed out the rents there. So now we're just kind of holding, you know, we're going to wait for more opportune time to exit with that one.
Sure.
But the townhome community, I'm like, dude, let's keep holding this thing.
Yeah.
The rents keep going up. But I think a lot of markets, to your point, we're seeing rent growth kind of slow down, especially areas like Phoenix, which had record rent growth for all those years. We're seeing a lot of that stuff slow down, you know, in the rate environment. A lot of these operators that got caught with the floating rate debt.
Yep.
I know myself included, we bought those two North Carolina deals early 21 on floating rate debt. And, you know, obviously with the rates going up so much, we were forced to refi into fixed debt, about 5.5. We did the refi about a year ago, exactly. And we were able to do a cash out with the Arbors. That was a townhome community. Cash out $2 million and return $2 million back to the investor. Still own that deal. Timber Creek, we weren't able to do a cash out, but we didn't have to bring money in to refi. It was a rate and term refi. We didn't have to bring money in and still kind of holding that thing. But a lot of other operators that got caught with the floating rate debt were not in position to do that. And they had to bring money in. I was out in Houston, actually, interviewing the apartment rock star, Robert Martinez.
Oh, cool.
He was on the show about 6 months ago, right after he foreclosed on that $51 million multifamily note. So we talked about it.
Yeah.
And he was talking about where he went wrong. And he said that, you know, with that particular deal, it was A-class building, not a lot of value add potential. He said in due diligence, they kind of overlooked that about 30% of their tenants were actually doing Airbnb arbitrage. And so when Airbnb kind of like got a little oversaturated, a lot of these tenants kind of pulled out. And then he said, in addition to that, he had just went from in-house property management to third-party management. And he said third-party lost a lot of control. And he, unfortunately, they kind of ran that property to the ground, and the lender was trying to work with them. And they had a deal to, like, you know, work with them. But right when they're putting a deal together, Robert took the property management back in-house.
Gotcha.
And the lender goes, hey, we're only going to work with you if you continue to use third party. He's like, I'm not doing that. So ended up foreclosing on that one, $51 million note.
Goodness.
I'm like, fuck, that's a big deal. So he had 15 deals go good. And then he had that one. I'm like, fuck,
at least
tough,
he was
dude.
Transparent about it, though.
He was very transparent.
Like, you know, people could just put out in the in the world that everything's all good.
I mean,
just like you, we have two of our assets that had floating rate bridge loans as well. We purchased rate caps on them. I think there's a lot of people that didn't. But I mean, this year, 2024, there's $64 million worth of loans set to mature, right? And of the $64 billion and $22 billion of those are bridge loans, which is crazy. So, I mean, if you put the right, you know, foundation in place right now, there could be a lot of good deals coming up in the near future.
With real estate investing, asset protection and protecting yourself from personal liability is huge. The best way to address this is to correctly set up your LLCs and entity structure. For us at Summers Capital, we use Prime Corporate Services to set up, manage, and provide guidance for all of our entities, making it truly hands-off. If you want to learn more, visit primecorporateservices.com/richsummers to book a free call and receive a special podcast listener offer. Again, visit primecorporateservices.com/richsummers to book a free call. Now back to the show. Yeah, it'd be interesting to kind of see how that shakes out, you know, and it depends on which bridge lenders you're talking about, because some of them are, they don't want to be operators, right? And so they're like, hey, like, as long as these operators are making their debt service payments, we'll work with them. We'll give them extensions, whatever they need to get through this. They don't want to take back these assets because it's a lot of work for them. And
they don't want them.
They're not operators.
Mm-hmm.
Now, other lenders, I don't know. I've heard stories, but I've actually never met a bridge lender. I've always heard stories. You hear people say, like, oh, like those bridge lenders, they prey on like taking back assets that go bad and then they get to resell them. But I've actually never met or done a loan with a bridge lender that's actually like that. So
I've heard of like one story.
You have?
That's it. Yeah. But apart from that, it's good if they can work with you, right?
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
They don't want it.
So I don't know. It's interesting, but I also know of, like, and I'm sure you do too, of, like, you know, funds that are basically raising capital just to address operators that are in a pinch that, you know, have bridge loans that are coming due, and they don't have enough NOI growth to kind of free finance some permanent debt. So they come in, fund some of these deals. They're going to take some ownership. They're going to take some equity. I mean, there's going to be a cost to that capital, of course, but the deal is not going to go back to the lender.
Yeah.
You know, so it'd be interesting to see how that kind of shakes out. So how many units total now are you a GP on?
Yeah, so 2,043.
2,043, man, that's impressive in just 3.5 years.
Yeah, and there's some deals we're bigger parts of than other deals. But overall, it's like experience, and it's not all about the door count. You know, it's like for me, it's like I want to get as many experiences and as many deals as I can, learn different parts of different kinds of deals. And so, I mean, there's some we have 5% ownership. There's others we have 80%. And so it just kind of varies across the board. But at the very beginning, I was just willing to partner up with it, like whatever people I could that could add value to the deal so we could get it done. But also, too, you learn a lot through those processes. You know, partnerships, that's a whole nother topic I could go on for days about.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it. So I've done, you know, the beauty of real estate investing is there's so many different ways to skin the cat. I've done smaller deals on my own where I own 100%. I love those deals. Short-term rentals and multifamily. And then I've done deals with joint venture. We're partnered with a couple guys. We bring just our own money in, no investor money. And those have gone well. And then I've done deals like larger syndications to where we got multiple investors. I've done deals with co-GPs. And now I got the boutique hotel fund where, you know, we got investors in a fund and they're diversified across four assets. You know, three of those assets were 100% GP, Summers Capital. And we have our investors, of course. But this latest one, we're actually partnering with a couple folks in our mastermind.
Cool.
It's going to be part of our fund, and we're co-GPing with a couple mastermind members. We are majority owner, and we are the property manager on that asset. However, we do have co-GPs on that deal, which changes the dynamic, of course, right? So I guess my question to you is, you mentioned some of these deals are even as high as 80% GP. Is that your sole company, or do you have partners on that sole company?
Yeah, so it's my sole company.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it, yeah. Got it.
And I have in my bit, so I founded it back in 2020 when I was coming through the program. I actually brought my, I didn't mean to, but brought my wife's parents in as my business partners in my company.
Oh, nice.
So I'm not sure if you met them. Maybe you did at Peak Partnership.
Oh, they were there. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's cool,
so,
man.
On day two, Brett Davenport, my father-in-law, he kicked off the event. So he spoke on all underwriting. So I'm not sure. What time did you get in?
I got in on Friday morning at like 6 a.m., but like I literally just went, checked in the room and took a nap because I just come off the red eye. And then I was probably back out around 10:30 in the morning.
Okay. Yeah. Probably missed him, but yeah, it's been, you know, that's going to go one of two ways, right? Like by bringing in my in-law.
Either really good or really bad.
Yeah. I mean, at the time they were just my girlfriend's parents. So we weren't engaged yet. Nothing like that. We actually got engaged right over here by Coronado Bridge.
Really?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah. So we rented out a little yacht boat thing, had like 35 of our friends and family. And that's where I got down on a knee for my wife's
event. Dude, I love that, man. Yeah. That's probably one of the most iconic places in San Diego to actually like propose to a woman or get married.
For me, I think it was the perfect spot. It was good, man. Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah. You can't beat the view.
You can't. No. It was, and it's like, I have this little picture in our house and it shows like where I met her, where I proposed and where we got married, which is cool.
But that's crazy.
I brought her parents in as partners, and it's like, that's going to go, you know, one of two ways, right? We're either going to go do a bunch of deals and be happy, or, you know, maybe you got to find a new wife. I don't know, but it worked out the way it's supposed to. And yeah, feeling very blessed for sure.
Dude, I'm glad that you guys made it work. Cause at the time you said it's just a girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
And you know what? Hey, this is the way I look at it. If things don't work out, you know, it is what it is. You learn from it, you get better, but it was worth the shot, right? And I think a lot of people, they get caught up in like, oh, well, what if this and what if that? And what if it doesn't work out? What are you going to do? It's like, well, I'll pivot and I'll figure it out.
You're going to miss the shot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. But if you take that shot, well, you got a 50-50 shot, you know? And that's how I see it. And if anything, it gets you better for the next time, you know? And you can apply that concept to not just dating, but a lot of different things
Everything.
In life.
Yeah. A lot of people get, what's that saying? Like analysis paralysis, right? They get so caught up evaluating an opportunity and then end up never taking action on it. And then they're like, shit, well, I missed the boat.
Yeah.
So
you missed the boat.
That's
but anyway, so her folks are involved with your syndication business. What's your take with like being kind of the sole GP or majority is GP versus being involved with a lot of different co-GPs?
Yeah. You know, This one's a little tougher. Like, I've loved every deal I've been a part of. I will say I love the deals the most, the ones that we are majority owners in. We just like the way that we do things. And like, you get answers quicker. You don't have to rely on other people for things. Like, you can just do things the right way. Like, we were talking about management companies before. That was a question I actually had for you. So you've done some smaller multifamily, right? So like, on those smaller ones, are you like, is there a company managing those? Like,
With the smaller multifamily deals, I have third party management.
Okay.
Now the short term rentals that I own solely, like, we actually self manage. So one of the companies here that we have is like a property management company, but it's only to manage the boutique hotels and the short term rentals. It's just like hospitality. But all the multifamily use third party, except for the two larger deals in North Carolina. We have the coach sponsors, Tony Azar of Mac Venture Partner, John Azar, their brothers. They own about 5,000 units out in like the Southeast. They have their own management company.
Nice.
And so although we're using them, it's still kind of like in-house management. We have full control.
Yeah.
Anyways, go ahead.
That's where we want to trend to.
Okay.
I mean, we've cycled through 3-4 different management companies now. It's just tough. You know, the issue I feel like is a lot of them, they think like property managers, not like business owners.
Yeah.
And there's just a little bit of a disconnect. And so we've had to let them go a few different times now. And that process, that transition takes time, money. So it's not fun. But eventually what we're trying to do is bring that all in-house. Mm-hmm. So we want to have our own management company in-house, which would be good.
Yeah. And that's a whole nother beast.
And
you know, it's funny, when I was talking to Robert, he's going back and forth, the pros and cons, and it's a whole nother beast. I mean, I know that from building this one out. Property management is tough, but you know, for us, our management company is not to make a profit. It's to break even, and it's to operate lean, but efficiently. But most importantly, like you said, to give us full control over decisions. So if a property is not performing, it's like, okay, let's meet, let's figure out why, let's make a pivot, and let's fix it right away. With third party, when something's not performing correctly, it's a much longer feedback loop to get it operating correctly, if that makes sense.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. So like, on those smaller ones, like, you're self-managing some of them, but like, the thing is, like, we want that control. And if we can't get it, like, sometimes you run into some of those management companies you just don't align with. And, you know, we want to bring it in-house. It's a whole nother task, like we said, but we just launched a construction company of our own. We brought that in-house.
Nice.
They were marking up the work in Houston 40% or more. So same thing, though. We're looking to break even, and then the excess would just go back to the bottom line, back to our investors, and make the deal more profitable. So
yeah,
it's kind of the route we're going right now.
I love that, dude. So what do you say to, like, you know, some of these newer multifamily investors, or maybe someone listening to this podcast right now, and they're like, hey, you know, I got the funds to maybe take down a small deal on my own, or I could take down a larger deal and have a few partners. What do you think the best route is for someone like that?
Good question. You know, I think there's not necessarily a right or wrong answer. I think the best thing to do is just take action and get in the game. Like, real estate in itself can just completely change your life, can change the path you're going, for sure. So I think it's not a bad thing to start small. If you have the connections, if you have the network, the resources to go partner up, then yeah, try to tackle something a little bit bigger. But if you don't have that network, then one, either go find the network, jump into a mastermind, something like that. But if you don't, then I think it's perfectly fine to start small. Yeah. As long as you have, like, you double check your numbers, triple check your numbers, maybe have somebody look at the numbers for you if you don't know for sure that the numbers pencil out. But yeah, not a right or wrong answer there, I think.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I agree with you, but I think for me, I would say, like, if you can, try it all and see what you like, see what you like most. So, you know, I've done some stuff on my own, and like, I like that stuff. I've done some bigger stuff with partners, and that stuff's worked out well as also. And so I like doing a little bit of both. This is how I look at it. I like syndicating the larger deals with investors, because it's like, you get to help investors now that otherwise maybe wouldn't have this opportunity to get passive income and tax benefits.
Sure.
You know, I have friends and family that invest with me. We also have people that listen to this podcast that I haven't personally met that invest with us, right? So we're building a diverse investor community. We got real estate CPAs, we got podcast guests that come on, they invest with us, right? So it's diverse, and I love growing that community. And that for us, it's not passive, because we're putting together the deals, we're sourcing the deals, we're renovating the properties, we're being a custodian of other people's money. and providing returns and all that sort of thing. So it's not passive for us. So it's almost like an active business. So I look at it as active. And then I like taking the money I make there and then buying some of my own stuff, smaller, that I own 100% of, and stuff that I'm like, okay, like I can go buy this one and I don't ever have to sell it because I don't have investors on that deal, right? So I say, try both if you can and see what you like more.
Yeah.
But just know one of them is going to be more active than passive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's why I was asking you earlier about your smaller ones because, you know, I've done all these big ones, but this I haven't done a small one where I just tackle it completely solo. But I've had tons of curiosity on it for sure. And that's why I ask about the management. Are you managing it? Do you have the third party? But it's good to know you got teams. Yeah.
And, you know, I actually did a podcast that last week I had my old business partner, Mike Tai, on. And we got into the game together. We actually still own a couple of deals together, but we no longer work together. We no longer are buying deals together. But that said, we had to did an episode on like the no money down real estate play. And this is like residential, right? So you can get a no money down residential loan to buy like a small multi or even like a residential property to single family or to do a long term or even a short term rental. And I was like, we were talking about, we had done five together collectively. And so we were talking like, man, if you have a W-2 and you have the ability to go out and get a no money down mortgage right now through one of these credit unions, or you're a vet and you can get a VA loan, I'm like, I don't think there's a better investment vehicle out there. And we ripped on it for a while. And so I think those are great. And a lot of people don't realize they can qualify for that. But at the same token, use whatever capital you have to go deploy into whatever it is. Even go invest as a limited partner, as a passive investor in someone's deal. And maybe take some and go do your own small multi and then go do a no money down loan if you can qualify. And now you've got three streams and see which one you like best.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that either.
Nothing wrong with it. That's like where I feel like I'm trending to, is starting to, like, all of my deals have been value add syndication deals. And I'm like now getting curious about where I can put focus and just kind of spread things out a little bit. See what else is out there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's a lot of different ways to make money in real estate. That's the beauty
of it.
Dude,
there's 200 ways, maybe more. And I think that's the problem with a lot of folks that are trying to get started, is there's so many decisions and they go through analysis paralysis and they don't know where to get started. Same reason why someone's like watching Netflix and they don't even know which show to put on is because there's too many decisions. Versus if there's only two decisions, well, that makes it easy. You know, back in the day, there was only four or five TV channels. You had, you know, NBC, CBS, ABC. And you get to pick one of four or five. That's an easy decision. But now it's like, dude, what do you watch? And so same thing with real estate. I think a lot of people don't know where to get started. And then they're getting advice from all these different people that are like, oh, do this. This is the best. Do that. That's the best. I don't say that. I'm like, look, find what resonates most with you. Get around a couple folks. Maybe they're influencers, social media, or someone that you look up to and someone that you resonate with, and figure out what they did to get to where they are. It's not rocket science. Like I share on this podcast, like the steps I did to get to where I'm at today. I have a boutique hotel investing mastermind. Like I share all the stuff that I did to get to where I'm at today. And you know, it's the stuff works. It's not, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. You just need to pick something that you're going to stick to long enough to actually get decent at it.
Yeah. And I love that you do that though, because like there's so many people, like you said, looking for like that avenue for them. Most of them don't know where to look, but like you're putting out amazing content, amazing information for the people, right? And it's like raw, real stuff that people need to hear. And I love it. Yeah, I love that you share everything, man. Super cool.
I appreciate you, bro.
Yeah.
So what's next for you, man? We're in April now. We're in Q2 of 2024. As you look out, you know, for the rest of this year, what are you most focused on?
Yeah. So up to this point, you know, we've done really well, very proud of it. But it's not sustainable what we've been doing, and like full transparency, people come up, they're like, oh, you're doing so well in the space. And like, I'm grateful for that. Don't get me wrong. I really am. But humbly, like it's not sustainable. We have been working ourselves to the bone, you know? And so this year, the focus is not just going and busting out five large multifamily deals. It's setting a foundation, like what you've built here. Like it's really impressive, and having teams and scaling your company. That's what our focus is. Is, you know, we're in the process of bringing on a couple partners to our company. Also hiring out. I just hired my first assistant, and
nice,
man, that's going to be a huge thing for me. But really, just kind of creating that time back. Like I put that 3.5 years of grind and hustle, and you know that whole concept of do today what others won't so you can live tomorrow like others can't. Like I've lived that for sure for the last like 3.5 years, And so now I want to put the foundation in place to be able to, you know, earn back some of that time. So now it's scaling. That's the focus.
Yeah. I love that. Dude. Yeah. Say that line one more time.
So do today what others won't, so you can live tomorrow like others can't.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's so powerful.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And I think that's really the name of the game. It's delay gratification. All these apartment buildings and hotels and all that, this is all delayed gratification. We're playing the long game. And yes, there's cash flow. And yes, we can, you know, force a lot of appreciation and there's refi events. But this is the long game. And so I always tell people, like, getting into the game, if you want to go full-time real estate investor, entrepreneur, like, you know, ideally, you have the long-term investments. You buy and hold. That's what's really going to build wealth over time.
Mm-hmm.
But you need some sort of active business.
Have to.
So what is it going to be? You know, often if you jump in and go all in on real estate investing, you don't know what you don't know. But once you get into it, you quickly realize and identify all these problems within the space that where maybe you can provide a service to bridge that gap, or you can, you know, create a mastermind, or you can create a property management company, or there's a million ways to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a way to create streams of income within the real estate space.
Yep.
That allows you to have a stream of active income. So you don't have to be buying deals all the time and playing the long game. So it's like a short game that's active, and then long game where it's like tax benefits, more passive. I think if you can find a good solution for both of those, that's the secret sauce.
For sure. Cause there's a lot of people too. They jump in, even students of ours, right? They jump in and they're like, well, do I need to quit my job to do this? I always say, no, like not yet, right? Like go see some proof in the pudding, you know, go do some deals, build that confidence up. But, you know, you need to make some money along the way because, again, like you said, it is a long game. So you need something in the meantime till you get to that point, start selling these deals off.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely, yeah. Man.
Your biggest partner in a real estate deal is always your lender. For me, I prefer using someone I know, like, and trust, whether you're looking for commercial loans, residential loans, bridge loans, DSCR loans, no debt to income ratio, no tax returns. My guy, Chris Groves, has got you. As seen on episode 77 and episode 142, Chris is a good friend of mine and is doing a special offer for podcast listeners, $2,500 off of your closing costs and or appraisal fees. Visit grovescapital.com/richdrummers to book a free call. Again, it's grovescapital.com/richdrummers to book a free call. Now back to the show.
I always thought going in when I first got into real estate, I was like, I'm just going to buy one or two apartments, smaller ones, get some passive income, and I was still going to work my day job. But what I realized is, like, once I did it, I was like, dude, I'm addicted to this game.
Yeah.
Like, I want to do more. What's the next deal? And then I was like, okay, I'm out of money now. I'm going to raise money. And I'm going to go figure this out. So I learned how to raise money. And then once I learned how to do that, I was like, I'm gonna punch out of this day job, you know, and got out of there. And what I found was, you know, all these ideas that, like, go through your head when you quit your job, or maybe cash out your 401k, or maybe, like, start raising money and you're trying a new venture, whatever it is. There's always fear of the unknown because you read the books, you listen to the podcasts, you hear other folks doing it, but you're like, okay, theoretically this works, but you don't really know until you do it. But what I've found out over the years is, like, the more you push yourself, the more you jump into, like, things that are, like, scary, the more you put yourself into positions to where you're forced to figure things out when you maybe don't have a solution, because things are going to go south. Like, it's just part of the game. It's part of the journey, and you got to figure it out. And you just get more confidence each time you push through adversity. And that's just how it is. And you get more confidence for the next time. And then something else happens. You're like, oh my gosh. But then you figure it out and you figure more and more stuff out. Then the next thing you know, you look back, you're like, dude, like, shit that used to scare you doesn't scare you anymore.
Yes.
And that's kind of where I'm at today. I'm like, we'll figure anything out.
That's so powerful.
You know what I mean?
So powerful.
And I think everyone should get to that point at some point in life, because it's a powerful thing.
Yeah. If you get comfortable with being uncomfortable,
yes,
then you become a weapon.
Ooh,
that's wild.
That's so good.
Yeah.
That's so good, dude.
Yeah. But it happens. I mean, like, everywhere you go, there's going to be curveballs. There's going to be things that throw you off your game. And, like, you need to be able to, like you said before, you have to be able to pivot and just keep moving forwards. Like, to me, there is no option to not hit the end result. Like, I will always hit that goal. And a lot of the time, the path is not just a straight line, right? Sometimes you're forward, then you're sideways, then you're backwards even, then sideways again, then backwards again. But as long as you're committed to the goal, you'll keep pushing. You just need to keep going, though.
That's so good, dude. It's like fitness is a really good example, you know. Sometimes, you know, we all get there where we're just like, we get some good momentum, and then all of a sudden, like, shit happens. You get busy and you stop going to the gym for a little bit, right? or you get sick and you don't go for a whole week, it's like, well, sometimes I'm just like, let me just get back in the gym, even if it's like a 30-minute workout, and just get that momentum. And then the next day I go for 40 minutes. And then the next day I'm like, fuck, like, I don't want to skip now. I just went 2 days in a row. And then now it becomes a habit. And so I think like sometimes just getting back into something, even if you take a week off, is as simple as just making yourself go through the motions. It doesn't need to be a killer workout. And it's the same thing with real estate investing. It's like sometimes you're not going to have that great day where you made a lot of progress. You're going to feel defeated. You're going to feel like you took a step back. But the main thing is like you did something.
Yeah.
Right. And something is better than nothing.
Yeah. I feel that all the time. But it is about momentum. That was a key word that you just said. It's like momentum. Like even before I was like really consistent, I got a coach now for diet and fitness. He actually lives here in San Diego.
No way.
Yeah.
What's his name?
His name's Max Sandquist.
Okay. That would have been crazy if I knew him. Okay.
I'm going to lift with him tomorrow.
Are you?
Yeah. We're going to go hit the gym. I don't know which gym he has, but I think Tyler's going to come too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So we're going to go hit
Let
it
me
at
know.
Four.
Do you and Tyler want to lift on Friday morning?
Yeah.
At Compound?
Yeah.
It's the best gym in San Diego for like weightlifting. Like all the fitness influencers, the trainers, they all lift there, but it's the best gym in San Diego. It's right here. You guys are throwing your event in Mission Valley.
Yeah.
This is an old town, so you're like 3 minutes away.
Yeah.
Friday morning.
Count us in. It would have to be early because our event starts at 7:30.
Yeah, I like to work out early.
Okay.
Let's do it. So we'll talk about it after the pod. But
for sure.
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
It's I can do back and buys or chest and tries. So let me know whatever you guys want to do, and I'll do the other one tomorrow.
Sweet. Sounds good. Done. Yeah, I'll get that. But like when you tie it back, like there's been times before I had this coach, I'd be consistent with my workouts for like 2 months.
Okay.
I'd feel really good. And then something would throw me off my game. Either I went on a trip or I was traveling and my diet was wrong. I ate bad. Next thing you know, I come back and I'm not working out at all for another 2 months.
Mm.
And so like, it's all about that momentum piece though. There's been times where I force myself even just to go in and I'll tell myself, I'm just going to walk on the treadmill for 30 minutes or run on the treadmill or do like a small HIIT workout. And then once I'm in there and I'm like pumping and sweating and feeling good, next thing you know, I'm having like a killer workout for an hour and a half.
Mm.
And so, but it starts with the momentum. It starts with that decision to just go do it, right?
Yeah, that's so good, dude.
Yeah.
How did you connect with this trainer that's out here in San Diego?
So I lived in Denver for 6 years. And one of my good buddies, he runs a roofing company out there. And his little brother is this guy, Max. And so I met him a few times up in Denver. He's been out here and just reconnected over social media. I knew he was launching his program and I was like, and he's shredded. I'm like, yeah, I got to get like that for sure.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's do it, man. Let's do the whole program. Let's do it for a year. So I went all in with it and he's been helping me get straight.
Yeah. How's that been for you so far?
It's been good.
Results wise.
Good. Yeah. I've been consistent on the workout side, but really for me, the hardest part was the diet because I'm lactose intolerant. I've got a sensitivity to like acidic foods and all this stuff. So like finding food, lean food that actually like fuels me and keeps me going is a challenge. And he's got very similar things that he deals with. And so he's been able to like tailor my diet and he's got an app. So he like puts my meals into the app and I just follow along.
Dude,
it's pretty cool, man.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it helps a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think, you know, to have an accountability, like coach or mentor, in all aspects, not just business, but like in the fitness space is huge. I'm excited because next week I got Lauren Fisher coming on the podcast the second time. She was on a year ago, but she's like, CrossFit Games, like freaking top 10 in the world, like stud female athlete. And she came on a year ago and she's going to come on next week. She's like, hey, let's get a lift in a Compound.
Nice.
I'm like excited, but she's going to kick my ass.
Yeah,
this girl can squat more than me. Like she is a freaking rock star.
She's not going to let you off the hook, man.
No, I know. So we might have to bring Parker out for that one and get a little content in at the gym. So excited for that one. It's going to be a good one. But dude, I know some people in the real estate, I'm sorry, the fitness space here in San Diego that are like getting into real estate investing. And, you know, some of them actually listen to this podcast. I go to the gym and they're like, hey, like, you know, I'm trying to do this with buying like a, you know, this type of deal, short-term rental, all that. And I'm like, dude, this is awesome. People are, you know, of all walks of life now are actually, they see in the benefits of real estate investing and, you know, rightfully so. It's a powerful thing. It's changed my life.
Yeah.
It's changed your life. And it's going to continue to change a lot of lives moving forward, you know?
Yeah. There's more information now that's accessible, especially because of like platforms with what you've built here. Like all of this, like information is just right there at your fingertips. If you just follow, like find somebody that you trust, find somebody that you know that's putting out good content, that's doing deals, just do what they do.
Totally. I got a question for you. So, you know, you jumped into this game through Tyler's program.
Yep.
And, you know, just in 3.5 years, you've seen a ton of success. and it's changed your life. And you've also worked with a lot of other folks that come through that program. Some fall off, some make some moves and actually do something about it. What is the biggest differentiator between someone who's successful as a new real estate investor and someone that maybe tries but ends up falling off and fails?
Yeah, I've been like analyzing that question just myself, like my entire time in the business, right? Like what separates those people that actually see it through and don't? I think it comes down to perseverance and just being willing to like keep going when times are tough. Like there's going to be failures, right? But I tell people all the time, it's like the only time you'll lose in this business is if you quit.
Mm.
Like if you just keep going, there might be bad deals, there might be bad partnerships that come up, but if you just keep moving forwards towards your goals and don't like stray away from that path, eventually it will hit. Eventually you'll meet somebody that opens a door for you, that you get into a good deal. And now that boosts the confidence up. You go to another one and another one. And so, you know, I see a lot of people, they have this emotional decision. Like they'll get excited about real estate. They'll get excited about multifamily or Airbnb or whatever it is. And then once they realize it's hard, they quit. And like, that's the key right there. It's like when it gets hard, you got to almost double down when it gets tough. And if you can do that, I think eventually you'll go see success for sure.
Yeah, that's so good, dude. I love what you said about sometimes if you just keep going and making these connections, you're going to have more opportunities arise. New doors are going to unlock for you. And dude, that couldn't be further from the truth. Like sometimes I get, if I look back in my 5 years of real estate investing, there's been some plateaus where I'm like, fuck, like how am I going to break through this next level? And it gets challenging. We go through adversity, but I stick to it. I problem solve and I figure it out. And all of a sudden a new level unlocks. And I'm like, oh my gosh, in this new level, there's all these new opportunities that I would have never found out about had I not pushed through. And I think that's my biggest takeaway from what you said, dude.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of times where like whenever things get tough, and like by all means, they will get tough. Like people in this business, you need to prepare for that. It will get tough. But when things get tough, what I tended to go do is I like flip the script a little bit and I stop thinking about why my life sucks or why things are a challenge for me. And I like flip the script and I start focusing on providing value somewhere else.
Give me an example of that.
Yeah. So like if I'm struggling in like my own life or like I'm struggling raising capital, then what I might go do is like I might go offer to help somebody else that's doing really well. And then maybe what that could do is lead to a door opening to potentially work with that person or learn something new from that person. And so like whenever I'm too in my own head about my own challenges, I'm like, just forget about me. Just go provide value to somebody else no matter what.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's really good.
That's what helps me.
And that could apply to all aspects of life, not just, raising capital or trying to find deals.
Yeah.
Like it could apply to anything.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
It's definitely a different perspective than the way a lot of people think about things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree, man. I think like the more value you provide, the more opportunities you will attract. You know, I think a perfect example is, a lot of people say like, oh, go become a good networker. Yeah, it's great. You can go to all these meetups and networking events and conferences. That's great. But on the same token, if you build something cool, like a cool ecosystem, maybe you build your own meetup or maybe you build your own podcast. And now all of a sudden people want to come hang out with you and they want to come network with you. A whole network comes. And so it's two different perspectives. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But all that starts with giving value, right?
For sure.
That's all giving value.
And that's what all of this is too. You're providing value to people. Question for you, actually. So when did you start your first podcast?
This is December of 2019. It was called The Multifamily Takeoff. And now it's called The Real Estate Takeoff. It's still going. I did it for like 3 years. And then I broke up with them. And then I started this one.
Sweet, man. So before you started one, like what were your thoughts like going in? Did you always want to like start this kind of platform, this like create this kind of ecosystem, this following?
So when I started the podcast, I didn't even know anything about podcasting. I didn't even know much about real estate investing. I was like really just getting my feet wet. I just closed on my first two deals. It was 11 unit and a 32 unit, just freshly closed. And I was like, dude, we're just going to start a podcast because we know it's a good thing to do. And we're going to start interviewing apartment operators. And that was all I was thinking, literally. I wasn't thinking about providing value. I was just like, we're going to start a podcast and start interviewing apartment operators. That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, it's exposure for one. But you never know whatever podcast episodes you're doing, like who you could impact, like who's listening, you know? So
You don't. And then I quickly realize, I'm like, whoa, like you start to like grow a listener base.
Yeah.
And then people are like, oh, like you're inspiring me and this and that. Now, when I started this one, I took everything I liked and didn't like about that one. And I was a completely different version of myself, right?
Sure.
And so when I started this one, it was a lot more strategic. And yeah, everything that we do with this one is a lot more strategic and dialed. But it should be. It was my second go around, right? And I'm a better version of myself. And so, but I think people hear me talking now. If a listener out there is interested in starting a podcast, and I think anyone that is a real estate investor or an entrepreneur, if you're out there thinking about starting a podcast, do it. Like, that's my best advice. I think it's a very powerful thing. I call it the secret sauce. But yeah, starting a podcast is huge. Even if just once a week, you know, you get to get on and talk shop and have a conversation. Most of my guests are smarter than myself, and I get to ask them questions that I legitimately have. I get to build a genuine connection. You never know what kind of doors or opportunities that's going to lead to down the road. And then in addition to that, you know, there's a lot of other benefits that come out of the podcast. It's not just the folks that you're interviewing, not just the connections that you're being made there, but I don't think there's a better way to market your business, to sure. be honest with you.
Sure.
You know?
You get better too. You get better. You listen, like you're interviewing or having conversations with people and
you're
learning things. It's like almost another avenue to increase your knowledge at the same time.
Oh, dude. That, I mean, I ask all the questions that I legitimately have. And then all of these guests I always connect with, and it's like, okay, well, if like I have Grant Cardone's number, right? So I wanted to, I could call Grant Cardone, and you know, a lot of these folks will pick up the phone because they know me now. And then that social capital, you know, it leads to all sorts of different stuff down the road.
Big time.
You know, whether it's getting new clients or investors, it's massive, you know? And so I don't know. I would say like, hey, it's the secret sauce, because most people are willing to put out social media content, but most people are not willing to start a podcast. The prime example is Joe Rogan. He started a podcast 14 years ago. He's done 3 episodes a week, and look what that's done for him. You know, I mean, imagine if Joe was in real estate investing, like he could raise probably billions of money like
yeah.
that.
Oh man.
So.
Man, I think you have inspired me to yeah. maybe start one. I've thought about it for about a year.
Man. Let me know what I can do to help.
Yeah, I'll pick your brain for sure, but
yeah,
happy to help. You got to come on mine when it's launched.
Hold me to it. Yeah, I'd love to. And dude, honestly, hit me up whenever. I'm happy to help. I mean, I'm on my second one now, so I made a lot of mistakes along the way, but it's not rocket science. And the main thing is just to do it, and then you figure it out along the way, you know?
For sure.
Anyways, my man, I appreciate you taking the time, Eric, to hang out. It's been a pleasure, and we got to get that lift in on Friday morning, man. I'm excited for you and Tyler to come check out the compound.
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Yeah.
Happy to be on. It was awesome chatting with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you guys doing any like happy hours or networking events with this event in San Diego?
We're not, no. So they'll finish
it's
around.
It's all business.
It's all business till like 5:30 to 6-ish.
Okay.
And then I was going to look up, see if there was any like local meetups I could go jump
yeah.
in.
Yeah, but it would have been great if our meetup was tonight. We do our meetup on Wednesdays. It's second Wednesday of every month.
Oh, but man. Just missed it.
I don't know of any other meetups that are this week, but that would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll just hang out instead.
Anyways, appreciate you, my man. Where can listeners get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm on social media. Yeah, Instagram, Facebook, all of them. My website, gibbyscapital.com. Go check out what we do, buying apartments, but happy to connect with anyone at any time.
Yeah, and go follow Eric on Instagram, Eric_Chatterton. And I appreciate you, my man.
Yeah, appreciate you.
There it is. He's Eric Chatterton. I'm Rich Summers. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you in the next one. Peace.